Matters with Dave Petzel on Idaho's Talk Station, 580 KIDO.
Hello, welcome, and thank you for joining us. 580-KIDO, 580-5436. That's our number, and of course, we're at Dave at PetzoFinancial.net. Dave at Petzo, P-E-T-S-O, not the sauce, financial.net. Let's go to Jim. Jim, thanks for calling. Go ahead, please.
Morning, Dave. What's happening?
Good morning. Hey, it's going to be a very windy, rainy golf outing today, but it's going to be fun.
And I wondered why you were taking off 30 minutes.
I know. It's 10 o'clock shotgun. What do I do?
Well, it's a regular, I guess you would say normal March or spring weather.
I know. But you're hoping for the normal good day that, you know what I mean.
Yep. Anyway, I called to make a very, very important correction, slight correction, that wah, 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 wah.
Oh, yeah.
Wasn't Charlie Brown. It was Charlie Brown's teacher.
Well, that, all the adults, actually.
Well, yeah. All the adults.
That's right.
But played by a trombone, probably.
That's right.
Anyway.
Yes. Well, thank you.
Anyway, I don't know. You know, I mean, it is nice to. I mean, it is like you say, it is some security and some surety. You know, and I was listening to some of the reports last night, like on PBS. You know, and these analysts are just trying to. You know, they ought to, they ought to just shut up and whatever. Whatever Trump does, they're sitting there trying to, you know, they'll go back and say, well, back in 2013, Trump said blah, blah, and now he, you know. And so, I don't know, just a bunch of nothing.
It is a bunch of nothing. It's absolutely astounding. If Obama would have had any backbone any point in time, then they would have been trumpeting it as the greatest thing in the world. Strong global leadership from this great man. And but Trump steps into a vacuum in the world and it asserts that we are not going to allow this kind of torturous horror to go on.
Well, you know,
when we have the ability not to. And now all of a sudden it's questioned as, oh, well, yeah, I don't know.
You know, perception is a lot of everything, right? And I think, for instance, you take the dollar versus, for instance, a little so-called silver dollar, which is not silver. I mean, those things didn't go over, right?
Right.
And it's people, I mean, they like the folding money, and it's perception. Well, you know, I always thought from day one that Barack Obama looked like a little boy. He did.
Yeah.
He looked like a little boy, you know. Trump looks like a powerful man. And perception is a lot, and the perception is now backed up by actions.
You know, whenever there is a president, a new administration that comes in, there's always going to be a test. And I don't mean sometime in the 8 years. I mean, it just seems like there's always something fairly quick, whether it was Reagan dealing with the Iranians, Obama dealing with the economy, and then the Russians. But the question is, you know, the world's going to test. And so the world's pushing. And we've watched for so many years now that the Chinese have expanded their influence all over the China Sea and just continue to push out. And now we're going to try to push back. We'll see if we can. We're going to have to. Iranians have been allowed to just continue to flourish in the Middle East, and they're awful, but because Obama wouldn't do anything, so now we have a vacuum and we have a president pushing into it.
Yeah.
We will see. We've got more tests coming with North Korea as well as the Chinese.
I think these guys are going to respect Trump, and you know, and I think they can actually identify with Trump. And when Trump said that he admired Putin for being a leader, had nothing to do with other. You know, I mean, Putin was a leader.
Right.
I mean, whether good, bad, or indifferent.
Yeah, you know? But if you hate Donald Trump, then you read that as he's going to, you know, give Putin. Here's the other thing I want to ask this. This is a question, okay? I'm going to have to roll after this, after you give me your comment back on this, okay?
Sure.
But this is a, this to me is one of the things I've not heard anything about, and I know we will. I just know we will. But the first thought I had when this blew, right? Is it the Russians are pissed, right? Of course they're pissed. Well, if Trump has been somehow just elected by the Russians, and so he's in bed with the Russians, why would he do this? Doesn't this, like, the whole Russia theory thing is now completely washed up, or do we have to hear about this for years to come?
Yeah.
I mean, he wouldn't be doing this to his best pal, would he?
No.
I wouldn't think so. Not, like, right off the bat. Well, hey, the Russians are mad, so let's drop bombs on the Russians. The Russians built this base. Let's go destroy the base. That's not going to make them happy.
And well, I heard also within an hour before that happened that the Russians actually moved their people out.
Oh, yeah.
You know, they knew it was going to happen, and they anyway, I think it's a show on their part, and they're not all uptight with us for doing it.
No. Well, that's probably true, but my point is how much longer are the liberals going to hang on to this great Trump conspiracy with the Russians that we can't ever find any real proof? And now all of a sudden he's dropping bombs on Russian bases. I don't think they're in bed with each other, and I think they just kind of decided that maybe we should quit reporting
about
it.
Well, you know the way I look at things? Personally, no Russian has ever done anything to me. So, I mean, I'm not pissed off at the Russians. Why should I be? So.
Well, it's a historic thing for my family because they were murdering piles of crap. That's what they did. They killed my family in Czechoslovakia. So
yeah,
no,
that was Stalin and Lenin. And
well, it was the 1950s when they took over Czechoslovakia. So, but your point is, look, I understand, but at the same time, this is a nation of thugs, and I'm not sure. I don't know that they aren't changing. I get that, but I certainly don't trust Putin, and I think that it is an ongoing and real concern with them.
Yeah. Well, it's just like, you know, the people are nice, it's the government and all that kind of thing.
I understand what you're saying.
Well, anyway,
Jim,
take care.
Have a good day. Good day.
I presume that the stock market will keep flying.
Well, the only thing I can tell you is that the odds are it'll keep doing fine.
Well, stocks are more exciting than bonds. So.
Yeah, that they are, especially at today's interest rates.
Have a challenging golf game.
It will be that, I'm sure, as if the sunshine wasn't challenging enough anyway. Have a good day, Jim.
You too. Bye-bye.
Our number here is 580-5436, 580-KIDO. It's Dave at PetsoFinancial.net. We'll be right back.
This is Money Matters with Dave Petso. Dave is taking calls right now. Call 580-5436, Idaho's talk station. Is Money Matters with Dave Petso on Idaho's talk station, 580 KIDO.
Hello, welcome, and thank you for joining us. 580-5436, that's our number, 580-KIDO. So, and also Dave at PetsoFinancial.net. All right, so when they talk about the Fed minutes in a meeting, you know, I'm going to talk about this in the education segment, okay? So hang tough. We're going to, because I got a, you know, beginning of the next hour, we got a nice little long block. Let me explain what that means about them trying to unwind this balance sheet, okay? Because that's going to be the talk of the town for however long it takes them to do it. And however many days they don't have anything else to point to in the news, so we can all, you know, hyperventilate about the Fed unwinding $4 trillion on their balance sheet. So we'll talk a little about what does that mean? What are they doing? And of course, much of that, honestly, we don't know yet. They don't know yet. They haven't decided yet how they're going to do this. So it'll be interesting. And if you don't know exactly what we're talking about, and I would guess that's really most people don't really know what unwinding the Fed balance sheet really means and why that's causing any concern in the market. And it does. And it should. We should all wonder about it. It's not like we shouldn't wonder about these things. So, and our number here, of course, give us a call, 580-KIDO. Now, prior to that, I want to talk a little bit about this because this is, again, what people miss so often. We hyperventilate about every single problem, and we underplay everything that good that's happening. As I talked about before, rather than how difficult it is to see abundance in the world, problem solving in the world, businesses surviving in the world, how hard it is to see that, and how easy it is to see all the bad. And how strange it is to find that that seems to carry more intellectual gravitas to be negative. When the reality is, it's very hard to think through and to, you know, come up with some possibilities of how we might march forward. As to why, for example, when we see something as bad, we take that coin and flip it over and look at the other side. Is it bad? Is it really bad that this happens? Like instability in the Middle East. Is that bad if it leads to long-term stability? Well, of course not. But why don't we ever stop to ask that question? And I think it's partly because we just live in the moment. We live in this millisecond. There's nothing wrong with living in the moment. That's what we all hopefully strive to do. But not when it causes panic and loss of long-term sight. But one of the basic tenets that we've been talking about for the last several years is this. Why is our stock market so high? I don't know. Corporate balance sheets are the strongest they've ever been. There's more cash on balance sheets of corporate America than ever. The profits are the highest ever. The dividend payouts are the highest ever. And here we have quarterly profits are set to, there's no guarantee it's going to happen, but it appears to be, analysts expect, this quarter, right now, starting this week, to have the strongest increase in corporate profits since 2011. That's from 5 years ago. 6 years ago. Yes, I can do math. So, the strongest corporate earnings growth, best balance sheets, best cash flow, blah, 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 blah. I don't know. I just don't even know. I'm so puzzled why the market would be at all-time highs. Of course it is. It's the same puzzlement that people had at 12,000 on the Dow, at 14,000 on the Dow, 17,000, 18, 20, 21. Just can't. What goes up must come down, blah, blah, blah. Like we don't have an answer. It is simple, easy. When corporate profits are growing, when cash flows are growing, dividends are growing, that's just like, are you ready? You can write this down. I want you to be ready for this because you need to know this and refer to this reference piece of paper often. It's good news. Period. It's good. Let's just do it down to two words because we don't want to complicate it. Or, well, is it is? It's, can I call that one word? So maybe it's three. I don't know. Two and a half words. It's good. Period. It's good. It's not it's good, but it's good. It's not good, but the world's ending in this way or that way or what have you. It's good. Period. And because we get caught up in all of this constant negative faces in our little social media, end of world stuff. I hate Trump, it's so blah, blah, blah. Go, snowflake, go. And then on the other hand, we got people, I hate Obama, blah, blah, blah. And they don't invest. They're always afraid of something. Stop. It's good. Period. That's it. And when we do that, and sometimes just stop and say, why? Simple, basic things. Why do I have to figure out all these machinations and all this craziness? What about just stopping and saying, it's good. Done. Or even looking at the very difficult to find good news. Like corporate profits, highest since 2011. Period. Interesting, isn't it? Just don't hear anything about that. Do you? Have you heard that? Did analysts expect this quarter to be the strongest in 6 years? Nope, but we get to hear about how bad this report or that bad that report and how we really need to put gold in our safe. Hi, I'm an actor. I don't know anything about finance. I don't know anything about anything, frankly. but I'm going to sit here and I'm going to scare the socks off of you. And they're going to pay me a bunch of money. Here's what I have in my safe.
Really?
Like, ooh, so this washed-up actor, who never really was a big deal, and now at the same point has absolutely no degree in finance or any background at all, is telling me what to do with my money. I better listen. Wow. That's the weird world we live in, isn't it? If we scare people enough, we make money scaring them. Crazy. Craziness. All right, give me a call. We need to talk about what you want to talk about at 580-5436, 580-KIDO. It's Dave at PetsoFinancial.net. Give us a call. We'll be right back.
This is Money Matters with Dave Petso. Dave is taking calls right now. Call 580-5436, Idaho's talk station. Money Matters with Dave Petso on Idaho's talk station. 580-KIDO.
Hello, welcome, and thanks for joining us. Hey, what's going on with the phones here, huh? I mean, seriously, there's no way you're out really playing in the rain, I wouldn't think. So let's give us a call. A lot going on out there. There is a lot. Like I said earlier, we've got the Fed minutes last week. Not something I usually talk about because usually Fed minutes are absolutely pointless, stupid, and it's just another reason to, you know, report stuff that doesn't matter. And it doesn't matter. It doesn't. Most reporting isn't and doesn't matter. It's not that. It's there just isn't that much news. It's not like they sit around every day and go, we got to make up stuff and report phony news. They just don't have anything to report. So when they do have to say something, they're always breathless about some importance that isn't. But at the same time, this week, the Fed minutes were important. Why? Because we're going to change the balance sheet, the Fed balance sheet. They talked about it. We don't know what they're going to do, and they don't know what they're going to do yet. And that's okay. But they at least kind of threw out the trial balloon, right? What's going on? What are they going to do? How are they going to change the balance sheet? What is it? And, of course, as I said before, in our education segment, beginning of the next hour here, shortly, I will talk about what that really looks like and means, okay? Because it's interesting to just say, and that's what financial news does, is just barf all over us about things that sound important and aren't, or are they? We don't know. Don't even know what they're talking about. Oftentimes, true story, the reporters don't know what they're talking about. They just read stuff. They're reading off a teleprompter. They don't know what it means, what it could mean. They read it, move on to the next thing. Doesn't mean a thing. It does. Our number is 580-KIDO. Let's go to Mike in Gooding. Mike, thanks for calling.
Good morning, Dave.
Good morning, sir.
I've got a real quick question. What exactly is an ETF? And how does that compare to just a standard mutual fund? I'll get off the phone and listen to your response.
I appreciate it. Thank you. Good question. Okay, Mike, thank you again, and have a good day. Stay warm, right? Warm, wet, dry? Wow. I can't imagine. Down in Gooding, I can't imagine how windy it's going to get today. As these storms pass through down that way. Anyway, no, you're not here for a weather report. Now, ETF, exchange-traded fund, ETF, exchange-traded fund. What that means is it's a package of securities. It's a set package. This is broadly speaking. There are some now that are actually going to be actively managed. Let me just say passively the most common one, the most famous one, is the S&P 500. It's called the SPIDER. SPY is its ticker symbol. They call it a spider. Makes sense, right? What it does is it simply mimics, not simply, I can't even imagine the technology behind it, but it mimics moment by moment the movement in the S&P 500. I mean, literally 500 stocks changing by, you know, in a blink of an eye and boom, and it's reflected in the price of an ETF. So other than like a mutual fund, which is also a package of securities, but typically is actively managed, meaning I don't want to own all the stocks of the S&P 500. I want to own this many, or these and not those. So it's actively managed is trying to pick winners and losers, right? Mutual funds price at the end of the day, not all day long. So that's big change number one. Market opens down 200. You want to own it right there, right now, the S&P 500, SPY, and zillions of others, ETFs, you can own. They're low cost. That's how they're sold. They're low cost. But are they? Yeah, we really need to do a deeper dive into them another time to talk about that, because some of them are not very cheap at all. Some of them cost more than a mutual fund, some mutual funds. Quite a bit more, actually. And not all of them are passive like the S&P 500. Passive meaning they're just mirroring an index. Okay, but what it means is you have a set group. And if we want to say, I want to buy an ETF, exchange-traded fund, of banks, then that's going to have a certain percentage of Goldman Sachs, Bank of America, J.P. Morgan, stuff like that. It might have a few dozen, actually, but of different weightings, but those weightings only change by market movement. They don't change because the manager comes and says, you know, we don't like the outlook of Bank of America. So typically, it's going to be a passive holding of an entire industry or an entire segment of the market, or in the case of a spider, the entire large cap universe. Okay? They also have total market ones, which is an attempt to cover even smaller names. So there are hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of these. Some of them are levered, and you do have to be careful. But they are fairly complex. And that's why you hear about them. But here are some of the things you hear. This is what you should do because it's going to save you a lot of money. Okay, that's possible in a passive S&P 500 type of investment. You'll clearly save money. But is that a diversified portfolio? Those are the types of questions. So an ETF, exchange-traded fund, in my opinion, is a part of a portfolio, not a whole. And it is a lower-cost solution for most of them, but not all. So buyer beware, be careful out there, and make sure that they're actively traded. But I don't see any problem with melding them into a portfolio. Exchange-traded funds, ETF, are clearly taking money out of active management. And it's also morphing into more actively managed ETFs. We'll talk more about that later. Right now, we got to take a break for Fox News, and we'll talk to you in the next hour. Thanks so much for joining us. Our email address, if you prefer, is dave@petsofinancial.net. And, of course, we're at 580-KIDO. If you're trying to ring in now, it might be busy, but give it a chance here in a minute, okay? And right now, a very patient Liberty Linda is up to bat. Thanks for joining us.
Yes, good morning, Dave.
Good morning.
And, you know, thank you for sitting in for Kevin. You're a good friend to him.
Oh, he's a good friend.
You.
He's a good friend to everybody, but thank you.
I know. Anyway, we appreciate you. Well, I'm calling in to talk more so about an individual than our government. And I think as individuals, we live on curves. When we're at the top of a curve and we're doing well, then we feel it an honor and a privilege to give and help others. But sometimes we might be on the bottom of the curve where we may need help. And I think when we're going through that period that we look forward to the time that we'll be on top of the curve and be able to help others. And so anyway, I think that most people would live like that. Sometimes we're up and we're doing well, and sometimes we're down and we're not doing that well.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, I think in our minds it's always good to think that we would be in a place where we can give to others.
I think that's wonderful. And, Linda, I believe that's true of a lot of people. I believe that's true of you. But I also think that we have created within our society a bit of a dependent culture, that not a bit, a lot of it, where people don't feel compelled to ever move or change. And this is a society that has no reason for you to work because they will take money from you, take the freebies away, take away your, you know, here's your earned income credit. You know, in other words, your cash. They take your cash, your free food, your free health care. They take that all away, and that is a society that I don't think functions well for the human being. If you are on a curve of you've been a contributing member to society, and now you're not, I think you are okay, and we'll come back to it. But what if we grew up that way, and that was our life?
Well, we do see a lot going on, you know, in our beautiful United States today that we don't understand.
Mm-hmm.
And I agree with that. And I really don't know, you know, you're more of a place to kind of have a pull on the government, what's going on. I guess only through voting we have a pull on that at this time.
We
and
do.
Our new good president, you know, he will hear us.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think things are changing in the swamp.
Right.
I really do. I know that they're fighting it, but I think they're going to. And, Linda, thank you so much for your call today. I appreciate it.
Well, thank you, Dave. Have a great day.
Hey, you do the same. Thank you. You make it a great day yourself. And our number is 580-KIDO. I'll tell you what we're going to do because Aaron's been there forever. Aaron, I'm sorry, but you've only got a couple minutes, okay?
Hey, no problem. So just kind of honing off of what Ron Paul Jim was talking about,
mm-hmm.
Don't you think what the Federal Reserve does is redistribution by its very nature?
Well, no, I don't actually. No, we have to have a currency.
That's absurd. That's absurd.
Why? Why is that absurd that what they do isn't redistribution?
Debasing a currency is redistributing because the people who are first in line with that freshly printed cash have the benefit.
But that's all people. That's not redistributing. Hang on, Aaron. Calm.
You need to be consistent. You're not being consistent.
Take a deep breath.
It benefits your industry. It benefits your industry.
Okay. It doesn't benefit any other. It's because it's self-serving for me to say that it's not redistribution.
Of course it is.
Okay. Now, if you'd like me to answer, I'll be happy to. What I'm saying is it's not redistribution because everybody has that same dollar. If you're saying it's not right and you want us to go back to a gold standard or what have you, that's a separate argument. But redistribution of wealth is not me because I get to take the first dollar. It's everybody. Redistributing is taking it from one person and giving it to another, is it not?
Yes, and that is what it's done. The people who are first in line with that freshly printed cash have the benefit.
Meaning all of us who had a dollar 10 years ago had more value then with that dollar than we do today.
The financial industry is first in line.
How so? I don't understand what you mean by they're first in line. Like they have a different dollar bill than you do? Hello and welcome to hour number two of Money Matters. I'm Dave Pezzo and these are my opinions and my opinions only. It's not this station, broker-dealers, none of that. And we're not here to tell you what to buy, 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 and sell, 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 and just make noise. Hopefully, and I appreciate the last 30 years being able to do this and to come to you with just try to calm us all down just a little bit. Not just with some Pollyannish view of the world, but reality. You know, I think we miss so often. So often, how abundant and amazing the world is. And we just miss that because we're caught up in the day-to-day noise. And the problem is, of course, that it's all negative. And like pornography, you can't have 100% pornography pouring into your life and deal with it in a normal way. You can't. It's not okay. And look, I'm not trying to be vulgar. I'm just trying to make a point. People think that it's okay to just pour negativity into you all the time. It's bad news. We're all going to die. This, that, blah, 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 blah. It's just a constant negative narrative, constantly. Financial news. And even if we hit an all-time high, there's always a giant but after it, right? Well, the Dow hit 20,000, but... We can't even have a moment of reflection. It's like, we just won't stop and say, wait a minute, that represents a lot. This is an important thing. It's not a little thing. Oh, it's just a number. I thought you were like some sophisticated advisor or something. You're right. What I need to do is scratch my beard, tug on my hair, do something to act real serious about how it's not a good thing or an important thing. But here's the importance of it. I started off in the industry 35 years ago. Really. In the midst of the worst recession since the Great Depression. I'm not joking. It was the early 80s. It was horrible. We came off of the 1970s. Remember? Jimmy Carter walking over in a sweater and turning down the thermostat and telling us times were never going to be good again. Remember that? Well, the Dow Jones Industrial Average was at 800 on its way down to 750. Not 7,500, 750. Well, then we were never going to get past 2,000 or 3,000 or 5. Come on. You ridiculous people, you. And it goes to 10. And then to 20. And we're not allowed to go, look at all the wealth created. What an amazing God-given thing that this is to live in this time with this abundance. Instead of, you know, like medieval times. Hey, we have marches because women are so oppressed in today's society. Really? They're just so bad and the poor are just so poor. Really? No, they're not. And we can't get this. We can't get free internet. And everybody needs to have a free cell phone. I don't know what all the negativity is going to be, but we know it's there, right? It's just constant. Bam, 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 bam. World sucks. It's terrible. And then we miss in this whole thing. Well, what do you think the market's going to do? Do you know what I think the market's going to do? I think the market's going to go up. Why? Because odds are it's going to go up. See, about 70% of the days, one day, are up. And more of the weeks and more of the months. I'm sorry, 60% of the days, 70% of the years, 75. So 3 out of 4 times the market's up on a one-year basis. So I'm great machinations. We at Goldman Sachs, we've been grinding over the numbers and possible P/E ratios and the outcome of interest rates because we know all that stuff. No, they don't. And what do they always say? Well, we expect, you know, a high single-digit year to low double-digit. Okay, that's great, except the same thing they say every year. Every year. We grind over numbers, and guess what? The market is almost always up. But, oh, the times it's down. We just need to run around with our hair on fire and wonder what we should have done, what kind of hedge we should have put on. We need to put it in some kind of, you know, equity indexed annuity thing that promises the market will go up, and we can get all that participation without any risk on the downside, and that doesn't work, but we want to believe that because, oh, if the market was to have one of those 1 in 4 down years, I need to rip my hair out. Because, oh, my Lord, my 30-year well-thought-out program, maybe I should change it. Or what I should do is, I'm probably not going to change it, but, you know, what I need to do is really fuss about it. You know, pace the floor at night and wonder if I would have, could have, should have done something. Or better yet, know why you knew this was going to happen and how smart you are and you can outfox the market. We all can do that, and that's the problem that we all do. We do. It's all negative all the time, and we sometimes forget the simplistic. Market's up 10% all of your life. Yeah, I didn't ask how old you are, because if you're over 30, the answer is it's 10. It's 10. If you're 43-year-old, 57, 77, it's 10. It's like this giant gravitational pull towards 10. Now, you can wreck that, and you've done a very good job as a human being wrecking that return. By figuring out why, you need to figure out how 1 in 4 years are down. 1 in 10, 3-year periods are down. 1 in 20, 5-year periods are down. You need to figure out which one that is. Instead of enjoying the 19 and the long-term return of 10, what you need to do is freak out and panic and ruin your life and ruin your investments and ruin your wealth by freaking out. That's what we do. That's what we talk about. And we'd love to hear from you. It's 580-KIDO, 580-5436, 580-KIDO. Now, I promised to talk a little bit about the Fed balance sheet. I know. That just makes me go, really? You are so exciting, dude. All right, we'll make it quick. Fed balance sheet. You've heard a lot about it. You're going to hear more about it. The Fed balance sheet is $4 trillion. Actually, over. Let's not really round it off. It's more than $4 trillion. Okay? And they expanded it doing QE and all that. So what they did was they make up money and they go into the market and they're buying bonds. So what do we own on the Fed balance sheet? We own bonds of various durations. And they've been reinvesting the interest and principal payments as they come in. They're contemplating not doing that now. It's kind of a big deal, but it's something that always had to be done. But it does make the market go, Now what's going to be the impact? The bond buyers, right? Same story. We don't know. Because we knew if the Japanese left the bond market 20 years ago, and they did, the market would collapse, but it didn't. And then we knew that the Chinese and all the trillions of dollars they have in debt was going to sink us. And they got rid of a trillion, by the way, last year. Did you know that? And interest rates declined. Yeah, I know. You would have had to find that on some obscure financial journal, page 99. Because nobody talks about that. Because we have to roll with the next why the world's going to end as the Fed buys back. A number of ways we can do this. And what they have to do is basically say, there is a time when that balance sheet needs to be shrunk from $4 trillion back to a more manageable few hundred billion dollars. And it's a process. Are they going to sell the bonds into the market? That could be a bit disruptive. That would be very interesting. I wish they'd get rid of, because there's such demand in the world, just go get rid of like a trillion. So we're going to stop at a trillion, but we want to get rid of a trillion right now. The rest we're going to let run off, that type of thing. I don't know what they're going to do, but what I think they're going to do, most people think they're going to do, is kind of test the water in various waters. Initially, probably just coming out and going, you know, instead of reinvesting all the principal and interest that we get, that little bit, we're going to let the bonds run off. Oh, that makes some sense. We could do that. That's cool. That's a good choice. That's an option. And most people think that's what they're going to gently do later this year. And maybe not raise interest rates as much, because that's a form of taking liquidity out of the market. Okay? So the Fed balance sheet that you hear about are all of those bonds that the Fed has bought from the market over the past 8 years. And now they're talking about it. They put it in the minutes this past week. Now they're thinking about, noodling on, how do we reduce that balance sheet? And why do they? And the answer really is, with all that liquidity sloshing around, there's always a danger of igniting inflation. That's why. That's why. We don't want $4 trillion of excess liquidity. Excess liquidity, that's a big word that really says this. Excess liquidity is not needed by the system. It's not been asked for. It was created by the Federal Reserve to push money into the system when we were failing. It's not needed. That's why it's called excess. Excess liquidity, if it starts circulating, called velocity, if you hear that term too. Velocity of money means how often it turns over in your society. If that gets going, and there's trillions of excess, you get the picture. We could have inflation. Now, I'm not saying banana republic inflation, but higher inflation than the Fed wants. It's time to get rid of it. It's time to normalize. Normalize interest rates. Normalize the fact that the Fed doesn't determine everything in the economy. You and I do. We as business people, get out of our way. Get out of the way. Quit trying to manipulate the market. Let it happen. And I'm not saying they've done things wrong. There's obviously, in hindsight, lots of things they could have done different. But let's not pretend that they're a bunch of bamboo. They're not. They're just not idiots. These are smart people. But they, like the rest of us, don't know what's going to happen. And they are trying some new things. And I'm sure with great certainty all of the doomsday websites have told you how it's going to be a disaster. Guess what? Here's a news flash. Those doomsday websites have been wrong for every prediction. Maybe they'll be right this time. Gosh. But my bet is they're not. They'll unwind it. Some parts will be messy. It'll be, you know, maybe an interest rate rise catches the market at a time when they're not happy. Or they do a bond auction to try that, and the market isn't happy. It's bad timing. Whatever. We don't know how the markets will react. Because also, remember this. It's not going to react in a vacuum. It's going to react different ways because there's different circumstances. The market's happy. Market's sad. And then they do the same thing, has a different reaction. That's why we can't know what the future is. So it will be interesting. Anyway, that's the Fed balance sheet. You're going to hear lots more about it. They just have a bunch of bonds, really in a simplistic way, a whole bunch of bonds that they've been buying out of the market. Now they're going to sell it back. And they're a big seller. So that's why they're going to go slow. Our number is 580-KIDO. We'll be right back.
This is Money Matters with Dave Petzo. Dave is taking calls right now. Call 580-5436, Idaho's talk station. With Dave Petzo on Idaho's talk station, 580-KIDO.
Hello, welcome, and thanks for joining us. Hey, final segment upcoming. Wait, I know you're thinking, well, it's 20 after. This is the last live segment, so if you have a question, please do give us a call. It's 580-KIDO. Out here in about 5 minutes, and then the recording is, we kind of reversed today, right, is with Kevin Miller from last Monday. As we've been talking about a ton of what you would normally think of as negative news this past week. I mean, a ton. And we just blow past it. And I think it's partly that we blow past it and don't just reflect that, wow, this market shrugged it off. I mean, it shrugged everything off. Sometimes, you know, if you're betting on the downside, you just think the market's stupid. The market doesn't get it, and it will, right? You get caught in that negativity. Not unlike, you know, spending all your time reading about the doomsday reports, right? That happens to people, and they do that all the time, and they just sit and read and read and read. And they do really honestly believe that this is helpful, that they're getting information. It may not be correct information. It may not be, you know, wisdom. It may not really be good guidance. But they're thinking this is part of the exploration process. I should learn more. I need to know more. But if it's wrong information, why do we want to learn more? We now just become more entrenched in our wrong-headed thinking. Now, this is really hard. I know I've shared this before, but you know, my brother-in-law gave a speech recently, and he's no conservative for sure, okay? I mean, he lives in... There's something in Seattle water. We all know that, right? You know, it's super liberal, unbelievable, off the charts liberal. So, but he gave a speech. You know, just a little Toastmaster thing in his hometown of Edmonds. And they were sharing it with me. So you'd be interested in what our dialogue was. And so they're just really short speeches, right? But anyway, so he's run this Toastmaster thing for, I don't know, 20 years. He gets up and he says, "We in Seattle." This, of course, is after the election. "We embrace diversity, diversity of color, diversity of creed and national origin. We just love all different people as long as you think like us." I mean, I was just like speechless, but not just in the way you would think. Like, oh, yeah, oh, yeah. Well, because that's the way liberals are. They are. They absolutely are. I get it. Totally. I walk around in a world that I pretend to care and love everybody. Nothing is effective in what I do. In fact, I end up with the opposite result most of the time. I end up with disastrous governments under, behind the whole idea that socialism is a good idea. It doesn't work. It enslaves people. It's a terrible thing. But it, because I care, and I sound like I care, and I'm politically correct in everything I do, it's okay. But people that have different thought, they're not welcome. It's an interesting problem. Now, let me turn that over and ask you and me, as I did, huh, what am I doing? What kind of bias do I have? What am I doing in my life to continue to only stay in a certain thought process? Where do I generate my own confirmation bias? It's an interesting thought before we just throw the liberals under the bus. Oh, they deserve it. There's no question. Holier than thou, the flyover country, the deplorables, clinging to guns and Bibles. Yeah, that's what they think of us. I get that. And they deserved what happened last year. They deserve worse. They deserve to be run out of our education system for their deplorable thoughts and closing down thought. But so do we when people differ. You don't think there's places like Seattle all over the country, maybe on the more conservative side? There are, where we all think the same thing. It's interesting, and when we take that and think about that in our finances, what are we thinking about? Are we only reading negative? Aren't we? Aren't we just grinding what we already believe? That's not deepening our thought. That's not helping our intellectual pursuit. It's just proving what you already think. And that really isn't being intellectually honest. Have a great weekend, everybody. We'll talk to you next week.
This is Money Matters with Dave Petzel on Idaho's talk station, 580 KITO.
And blessed to be a part of your day, Kevin Miller in the morning on 580 KITO. Coming up, we'll talk to our great friend Dave Petzel, get his thoughts on the state of the economy. Take your calls at 580-5436, 580-KITO. And, of course, we'll always take a look, as we do from time to time, talk a little bit about the housing market, talk a little bit about the jobs report. As the first quarter has officially come to an end, what does that mean for earnings? And more importantly, what does it mean for your job, your career, your life, and eventually your retirement? Dave Petzel joins us from the Petzel Center, Petzel Financial, Petzel on Twitter and Facebook. Money Matters, Saturdays, 8 to 10 here at 580KIDO. And occasionally he comes in when I get a chance to take a break and fills in. Good morning.
Good morning, Kevin.
How goes it?
It goes very well. What a nice weekend, huh?
So what was it like to host the morning show?
Kevin, yeah, I can't imagine doing that every day, honestly. That's a serious amount of work, man, being prepared. You're a tough guy.
Not only that, but just a serious amount of issues. Did you, at the end of it, did you find out that you had, like, voices in your head talking to you throughout the day?
It's pretty crazy. It is. I enjoyed it, of course. I mean, it's fun to do.
Sure.
And the idea that, and thank you for letting me do it, because it is a privilege to get an opportunity to, you know, talk about what you want to talk about, express what's in your head. And very few people get to really do that. And,
right.
And I did, but I cannot imagine doing that every day. It is a very... You know, I've done it before, but it always is a reminder of every single day you get in there and come up with new stuff for all of us to dialogue about.
Well, and it's you know, coming up with stuff just to do this every week is a challenge sometimes.
Yeah. Oh.
I always try and keep you on your game.
You definitely do that. You do.
So I'm going to my second source here. Before we get rolling here, the end of the first quarter, what does that mean for folks listening at 580KIDO? A good run, except for the last couple weeks. And
yeah.
I know you've been, once again, the champion of the market.
Yes, I know. It's a strange role for me to be optimistic about the future.
Sure.
You know
I'm
what?
Glad there's one optimist in the studio.
That's for sure. There's not very many optimists though in the world. It seems
We're
in a very, very negative spiral. Certainly, the news is very negative all the time. from politics to the markets, and it's been that way for a long time. This isn't new to the Trump era. But it is. But anyway, Kevin, you're right. It's been a great first quarter. We saw the market up 6% as the S&P. Now, the broader market wasn't up quite as much, meaning smaller company stocks. But tech stocks really did well, up over 8%. And we're seeing the market generally up over 10% since the election, including the small cap stocks. So it's been an amazing run in consumer confidence, business confidence through the charts. I don't know if you want to talk about that later, Kevin, but the confidence numbers are just amazing right now. They're just really amazing.
Well, I saw that you were talking about that with your girl Maggie earlier.
I was.
I don't know if we want to recycle Maggie's
content. You don't want to do the recycled news. But we're going to do a deeper news here, Kevin.
Sure.
That's, yeah.
So, I mean, Maggie only gives you 3 minutes. We give you 30.
That's exactly right.
Of course, probably takes 30 minutes to equal her content. So.
Who takes better care of me? I know who that is.
Well, exactly. But anyway, and her name's Maggie O'Mara. But anyway, at 580KIDO, let's talk a little bit about consumer confidence. Because on one hand, the new administration coming in, you've got jobs coming back, you have the president speaking, you know, that he's going to make America great again. And then all of a sudden you had this health care speed bump.
Yep.
And the markets reacted to it.
They did.
Why did they do that? What does that mean?
The main concern, that's why this past week where the market bounced back, Kevin, was such a big deal. You know, you think about the narrative of Trump pushing through all of these pro-business things, from Obamacare repeal and replacement to the taxes to deregulation. The only thing he has been able to do so far is deregulation. That's huge, though. And I think that people kind of make that a minimal thing, and certainly the press makes it anything he does very, very minimal. But I also think that, by and large, even people that aren't trying to make Trump look bad don't recognize how important regulation is to business and what a detriment it's been. So the things that are happening and can happen unilaterally, he's doing a great job on. Now we are going to deal with some of the bigger and more difficult issues of tax reform and things like that. And that's why, with the derailing of it last week, now the concern is will his agenda be watered down to the point where it's ineffective? That's the concern, and I think reasonably, it's not been a bump-free first 90 days or whatever administration.
Is,
I know, no, it doesn't matter. If it was Obama, it would have been the most successful 100 days in the history of the planet. Nobody's ever done it better, you know. And so I get that, and I get that that doesn't fit the liberal media's narrative. And that Trump would be doing anything positive, but some things have not gone well, and we know the healthcare didn't. Market rebounded from that, and I thought that was very strong. We were finished, as I said, up very strong for the first quarter.
From a business perspective, Dave Petzl with us, Kevin Miller in the morning here at 580KIDO. From a business perspective, though, what does that mean when you have Ted Cruz, you have Tom Cotton in the Senate saying, look, the premiums aren't going down. We're not going to support this in the Senate because we're not making America great again. We're sticking it to it. And then you have Paul Ryan going, something isn't better than nothing. And,
yep.
You know, then what was the election for?
You know, I obviously there's a lot of blame to go around. I don't know that they just didn't move this too quickly. I never wanted to see this. I think I was talking with you, Kevin, when I was like, I don't want to see this healthcare right now. It's a nasty thing. I want to see tax reform. I want the president to build momentum and popularity to knock through a few things and get the economy rolling again. And healthcare doesn't really immediately help the economy at all. So it was an agenda gone backwards. It was Paul Ryan had everything mapped out. It's going to do this and this and this the whole year. And I think that realistically, it might have been Newt Gingrich saying something along these lines. It just went too fast. It took Obama and company 9 months to do Obamacare, and we're not going to do it in a week. And it just was destined to be a problem. So it was too aggressive. They shouldn't have done it. And now there's a lot of infighting. But I think they'll get the party back together, Kevin. I hope so. Because it needs to, they need the Republicans on board to make this agenda go.
Dave Petzl joining us here at 580KIDO. Kevin Miller in the morning. So when we talk about the first quarter locally, what does that mean for businesses here in the Treasure Valley?
It means the when we think about it again, the one of the numbers that was so strong last week, I mean, it, not so strong, it was off the charts, and that's the consumer confidence number. It,
sure.
It skyrocketed to where it was in 2000. I mean, it was I don't want to miss the numbers, but it was about 125 on the chart, and they were expecting it to be like 110. I mean, that's how far ahead it was from anybody's expectations. Consumers are confident, meaning they're spending money and they want to spend money. It doesn't translate dollar for dollar or day to day. It means that people are more confident going forward and will probably be spending more in the economy over the next year. But to me also is when we see the business confidence numbers that are also jumping higher, that's when businesses are hiring, they're expanding, and that is super positive for the economy, for the job market. I'm very excited because those numbers really indicate a strong, strong feeling that the economy is moving to the right track, and the numbers all have occurred since the election,
right,
all
but,
of them.
But still the big impediment is healthcare.
Healthcare is huge, but it is huge to business, but it is not the impediment right now. The impediment is regulation and taxation. If we can, and obviously we're doing everything possible on regulation. It takes time to repeal everything, but there are no new rules going into place. And if business thinks I'll put it this way. If you open up a business and you know what the rules are going to be, you're much more likely to feel confident going forward.
But we've talked about that for years with you.
Well, yeah,
about
absolutely.
The cost of employees and everything else.
And regulation,
right.
What it is. And now all of a sudden it's gone. And what people want is like, oh, well, we want the good old days back. We're not going to get that. It's going to take time.
There you go again.
It's going to take time. And so what we want to understand is that by simply in November, we stopped making new rules. That's huge to business. We now know what the ground conditions are. And that's very, very positive.
Dave Petzl joining us. Kevin Miller here at 580KIDO. So... we could go on and on, but I've got a report here from our friends at the IBR. The Tax Foundation, which ranks states when it comes to being the business climate, recently Idaho ranked in the top half of the country, number 20th when it comes to doing business, thanks to its low property tax rate, average corporate and income sales tax rates. But Wyoming ranked first, Nevada fifth, Montana sixth, Utah ninth, Oregon 10th, and Washington 17th all received higher ratings.
Mm-hmm.
When we're talking about the business climate here. Idaho did compare favorably to several of its neighbors in the tax burden on individual citizens, however. Idaho ranked 26th for tax burden per capita, better than Washington, 28th. Montana, Wyoming, Oregon, and Utah were rated better, 10th and 21st, respectively. So the business climate here in the state of Idaho could be better compared to our friends in the mountain states, our neighbors, if you will.
No doubt. Mm-hmm. No doubt. Kevin, you and I have talked about the fact that, for a conservative state, we are fairly high taxed. We really are. And I know the geography isn't very good. It's hard to get north-south roads, and population to land mass is difficult. I get all that. But the reality is that we are in a fairly high tax situation here. And that isn't pro business. It's not. Why would you locate? Why not locate 100 miles in one direction or the other, or a couple hundred miles, whatever it is, and go to some place that treats you more, more fairly, if you will.
Right.
That's what business does, and they're free to do it. And I welcome it. It's a great thing. It's not great that we lose businesses. It's great that we have the freedom for businesses to prosper where they think they're going to be treated the best. And that's what's so positive about it. It's creative destruction. And we certainly, as a big example, Texas is very pro-business. And guess what? They're just booming, exploding, and have been ever since pretty much. I've been on radio, Kevin, right?
Exactly.
Texas has been doing very, very well. And they continue to do well because they are pro-business.
Right. They have a few more resources, too, as well.
They do. It used to be oil. It's not so much anymore. And now it's this whole environment of, with a strong tax base, meaning they can keep taxes low, but with a booming economy, that's bringing in plenty of revenue.
More coming up with Dave Petzl. You're listening to Kevin Miller on Idaho's Talk Station 580 KIDO.
This is Money Matters with Dave Petzl on Idaho's Talk Station 580 KIDO. Dave Petzl on Idaho's Talk Station 580 KIDO.
580 KIDO, Dave Petzl with us, Kevin Miller in the morning. We're just talking about assets here in the Treasure Valley. Obviously, Tamarack is something that has garnered a lot of attention. I believe it was the New York Times that did a piece on it a couple months ago about how they're continuing to try and thrive and strive and really survive. Now, you had a chance to visit there over the weekend. What was that like?
I did. It was depressing. It always is. I mean, it is depressing. You know, to see all those buildings that have been untouched for 10 years, it's crazy. But I don't know how they're going to pull out of it, to tell you the truth, Kevin. It's a really beautiful mountain. There's no question about it. It's a neat project, but you see very little building around there, very little building at all. And I don't blame the people. Why would you go step into a situation where, you know, there's got to be homeowners associations all over the place or you know, certainly one big one, whatever. And there's no way with that number of people you're going to be able to afford to take care of it, of the asset. And so it's a tough situation. I admire the people that are hanging in there and trying to make it work and the local homeowners. Without that ski lift, there's nothing there. So they really do have to keep that going. But the dream of a four-season resort is really, I can't imagine. Drove by the hotel there. There was literally not a car in the parking lot, not one.
That was what, yesterday?
Yeah, yesterday.
Damn.
Yeah, last day of skiing up there this year, and it was, there was just nobody there.
When we take a look at the history of that facility,
yeah,
you know, I've been there once. I've, had a chance to drive through it and such. Didn't get out and look at the lodge or anything, but I thought to myself, there's a couple issues here with this. The road in, the road out. You would think that they would have, if you're going to invest in all that infrastructure with the homes, you want to make it convenient as much as you can for people to get in and out of that place.
Well, you do, and it's really not that far off the road, but you're right. It's right, not right next to the highway.
The windy roads. Now, maybe I have an issue with windy roads.
You might. But getting up there to, you know, as you're really alluding to the main problem, and that is even if it was close to the highway, that's not near a population base. It's quite a ways out. And so how do you attract people there? How do you attract people to fly into there? Well, they fly into McCall, and you know what? They're going to probably stay in McCall. I mean, if you have your own jet, why are you going to fly into McCall and then drive down to Cascade?
Now, let me correct you for a minute, Bobby Axelrod here at 580KIDO.
Mm-hmm.
But you hear investment opportunities all the time. You do your due diligence. You know Dun & Bradstreet and all these things. I just go back to the whole idea of the creation of it.
Yeah.
Why would people invest all that money? You look at Sun Valley. Okay, Sun Valley tradition. You know, that's when the railroad came out here. So there you have it.
Right.
But to create this at Tamarack, were they really trying to come up with some type of exclusivity where it would take you a while to get in there and it would be like a refuge, if you will? I'm just trying to figure out the selling point when you look at the obvious challenges that the property presents even today.
It does present, and it does seem obvious, but all things are in hindsight. But to a person's dream of what they want to create, which whether it's a golf course, I've met several people in my travels that have really wanted to do their own golf course. Well, that's nuts. You have to have throwaway money. You have to have I don't care money. And to ever build a multi, you know, $10-20 million golf course that probably isn't going to make money, if ever, for several years. So it is something that people have these amazing dreams in their head that this is what they want. And this was clearly a group of investors. It starts with a B, but I can't remember the French guy that pushed this thing up the hill for, I think it was over 10 years, was trying to get the permitting and everything put into place to do this. And so people get these dreams and they believe that if you build it, they will come. And you know what? At first, Kevin, they did. People did come. And that place was on fire, and you saw auctions for property and for lots, and it was just a crazy environment there for a while.
Right.
And then we all know what happened with the recession. Then the idea of people having a second home, one in Tamarack, or a third home, or a fourth home, whatever it was, faded away very, very quickly, and the bills couldn't get paid.
Our friend Terry from State College, Pennsylvania, saying, Dave Petzo, consumer confidence numbers came from the Census Bureau. Why not the usual report on these numbers? GDP below 1%. Come on, economies are collapsing.
Okay. Well, I don't know if they're collapsing or not, but Terry brings up a good point. The consumer confidence numbers are hopefully a leading indicator, but they have not translated so far into hard economic numbers. Although last week, as a, if you will, some green shoots that we saw in the housing side with housing starts up tremendously, there are some better housing numbers. Now, whether that's because, and people will argue this, that it is because interest rates are rising, people are hurried to go and get their houses. But at the same time, the reality is that the housing market's still been strong in spite of people's calls for it to slow down and stop. So it hasn't, and that's not just local. That's a national on a national basis. But the consumer confidence numbers do take time, and business confidence takes a long time to come in. And it certainly, as I pointed out before, is not a dollar-for-dollar or day-by-day translation. As soon as you have high consumer confidence numbers, we can translate that into X amount of GDP growth. Now, as we're looking at on the GDP growth, you're right. We only saw this quarter was very, very weak. The fourth quarter was not as good, although the upward revision was actually 2.1, not 1%, Terry. It went up to 2.1%, which was a nice revision up over the last two revisions. So we moved from less than 2% to over 2 in the final number, and hopefully we're going to see the economy continue to grow. We're not anywhere near the 4% that obviously Trump has talked about, the 3% that anybody would talk about, and we never hit 3 one quarter during Obama's tenure. That is ridiculous, and we've never seen anything that weak. So, yes, it's weak. It's a plow horse economy. It just plows forward. It doesn't really grow, but it is growing a little bit, and so far the economy, I would not really say, is near collapse.
Quickly to Cindy here at 580KIDO, who likes that young man, Dave Petzo. Cindy, good morning.
Yes, I certainly do. He's so amicable, and he's so full of knowledge. Hey, I got a question to ask you. What about this for that property? I worked at Gardner, which is a maximum state prison in Newtown, Connecticut, and this was all farmland, and it was beautiful, and it was in Newtown. The state hospital, Watsu, I worked at, was a lower-level women's prison, and that didn't work out so well because of their behavior, but why can't they, with all, especially I live in Caldwell with that ridiculous jail and a tent, why can't they just look out of the box? That would be a perfect place. I drove there day and night, and when you're saying windy roads, where it is, why can't someone think how to get some federal dollars? It certainly, you know, people needing correction is not going to go away.
Sure. I thought you were talking about the HP property, and that's what I was whispering to Dave Petzo, but you're talking about public-private financing for the new Canyon County Jail.
I'm saying, what about that Tamarack place?
Oh, that's Tamarack.
Right, because that's exactly where, in Newtown, Connecticut, where I worked at Gardner, which was a maximum state prison. I worked there as a correctional nurse for a while, and it sounds like it's is right where not only that, a prison needs to be.
Well, it is a we don't want prisons right next to population centers, but we also typically don't want them a long, long ways away, where we can't get prisoners moved in and out and get them to the courts and things like that. But I don't know. I don't think you're going to see a ski resort turned into a correction facility, but your point is
a heck of a correction facility.
It would be you're right. It would, right. Wouldn't it? It would. It would be a little different activities for the prisoners. But at the same time, you're right. I don't know how to get the federal dollars in there, and I'm not sure that they are. If we stop and think about this from a real capitalist level, it is depressing to go up there and see buildings that haven't been touched for 10 years, to wish that the best upon the people that are there. But if this is going to die, it should die a natural death and not have us artificially pumping in